What are some practical and personal issues facing many single men and women? And how can singles live secure in Christ? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for June is Hello, My Name is Single. It's written by regular guest Adrian Dorr Heinz. Hello, My Name is Single is published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040. Or you could find out more about Hello, My Name is Single at issuesetc.org. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin on this Monday afternoon, June the 30th. We're going to round off the first hour talking with Colleen Carol Campbell about Christianity and capitalism. Is God a capitalist? Are there tensions created under any economic system? As a Christian lives in a world where, well, to be quite frank, money talks. Joining us to talk about Christianity and capitalism, Colleen Carol Campbell. She's a journalist in Washington, D.C., former presidential speechwriter, author of the books My Sisters, the Saints, and The New Faithful. And she has written a recent column for The New York Times titled It's Possible to Balance Beliefs and Aspirations. Colleen, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
First of all, we've been a while since we've spoken with you. Bring us up to date on what's been going on in your life.
Yeah, well, I moved out of the St. Louis area about a year ago to come out here to D.C., and I've been was executive producer and anchor of a new newscast for EWTN, a television newscast. And I also gave birth to my fourth child, a little boy, Joseph Francis, a few months ago. So now with four kids, four and under, I'm not doing a newscast anymore. So I'm back to writing, which is a little more manageable with my schedule, but it's good to be back on with you, Todd.
The most recent piece you've written for the New York Times, you say near the end of the piece that Christians just have to content themselves to wrestle with the tension of worshiping a God who became poor while we live in a culture where, well, quite frankly, money talks. And you say, and I'd like you to explain this, that if we believe we found a way to escape that tension as Christians, we can be fairly sure that we found an idol instead. What do you mean by that?
What I mean is I think it's always a temptation for us as Christians to want to find some sort of ideological system or economic system that will make us completely comfortable in our skin in this fallen world. And so, you know, that temptation often manifests itself in either embracing a political party as sort of your quasi-religion or embracing even the excesses of capitalism. And, of course, capitalism has done a lot of good in the world, but I mean the conspicuous consumption and the materialism and all the rest of it, and saying, well, this is okay. I can do this as a Christian. I don't have to be too disturbed by those words of Jesus in the gospel because, you know, that isn't really what he meant. You know, and the other temptation, which I think we also see in our culture, is that of scapegoating capitalism, saying that, you know, it's responsible for all of our social sins and even my personal sins. And you know, if we just had a different or better economic system, or you can translate this to politics, if we just had better politicians, then everything would be utopian. And again, we could be completely comfortable in this world. And I think over and over we read in the Gospels that that's not really our lot in this life, to be completely comfortable, to be, you know, universally praised or completely at home in this world. And I think we just have to live with that tension. And if we ever find ourselves completely satisfied with life here and now and our current political and economic scheme, I think it's likely, as I said in the column, that we've found an idol and we're not really paying attention to the demands of Christ anymore.
Let's talk a little bit about capitalism, which, I mean, like democracy, some people have opined it's the best of many bad choices for, and certainly not an ideal economic system. You prefer to talk about it in terms of effective economic systems and ineffective ones. How would you make that distinction? Why is that important?
I think that's the best we can ask from an economic system. And so I think when we're looking at them and evaluating them, we can ask ourselves, does this system, you know, by and large, make it more possible for more people to flourish, to get what they need in the world, to sort of realize their aspirations? Or does it make it so difficult that that becomes almost impossible? And when you look at different economic systems, I think you have to say, you know, to borrow from Winston Churchill's quip about democracy, and as you mentioned, you know, it's the worst system except for all the others. And so it's not perfect. It's not flawless. Can it encourage greed and conspicuous consumption and, you know, the ignoring or marginalizing of the poor? Absolutely. At the same time, we've seen so many other systems that do an even worse job of encouraging human flourishing. So I think it's what we've got, and I think there can be a lot of good that's done with it, but I think it all depends on, you know, how we use this system. And, you know, and thinking about it as Christians and requires us to think about economic policies that don't just reward the rich and leave the poor behind.
There's a strange kind of confusion that takes place in the mind of many American Christians, and I think it's tied up with a genuine kind of perhaps naive patriotism. Also, seeing and witnessing the historic results of other economic systems like communism or socialism or any of the others, to confuse capitalism with Christianity, to essentially say, well, you know, God's a capitalist. How would you respond to that?
It is a temptation. And, you know, again, I think you put capitalism up against communism. It's a no-brainer, which is the better system and which one actually allows people to live in more freedom and, in fact, worship in more freedom in countries where there's a free market system and freedom of ideas as well. But I think that's right. You know, Jesus was not a capitalist. He wasn't even an American. You know, he has some pretty countercultural words for us, and he has some pretty harsh words about money and wealth. Over and over in the Gospels, he returns to that theme that if we put our trust in money and we find our security in our wealth, we are fools who will wake up one night and find that it's all gone. If not in this life, we'll certainly find that out in the next. So I think we have to listen and listen hard. And, you know, I think it's interesting. Pope Francis has been getting a lot of heat and attention in different circles for his pronouncements on this matter. But really, I think it's a useful thing, some of the dialogues that are being stirred up by his comments, because over and over he's saying, you know, look, we got to be thinking about the poor. That's what Jesus said. We need to be thinking about simplifying our own lives. That's what Jesus called us to. And, you know, it's tempting to believe the health and wealth gospel because it's so comforting in so many ways that somehow if we just behave ourselves and do what God asks, he'll just give us all sorts of material rewards. But, you know, anyone who's lived for any length of time finds that that's not necessarily the case. And sometimes what you get for following Jesus is a share in suffering. And that's actually often what draws you even closer to him. So I think that's the reality of the Christian life. And anything else, I think, is a form of idolatry in the sense of believing that somehow our money or material possessions are proof positive that we're right with God, and anyone who doesn't share those kind of possessions and blessings is somehow just not praying hard enough.
It's no secret that the mainline press is a bit enamored with Pope Francis. They like to at least portray him as a breath of fresh air from his predecessors, especially John Paul II and Benedict. But is he charting a new direction in terms of his view of capitalism, communism, the other economic systems, man is an economic being in some certain sense, than his predecessors?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, I think he is bringing a lot of new, fresh gifts and insights to the church. I think each pope does that because each one is a human being who comes with his own gifts and his own life experience. And, you know, I love the conversations that Francis is starting. I love a lot of what he says, and I think it's good for us to hear. And it challenges people even inside the Catholic Church who have gotten too comfy in certain ways. So I think he's great. But when you look at his economic pronouncements, yes, they are often very pointed. His apostolic exhortation last fall was very clear about, you know, his concerns about an economy of exclusion, as he described it. At the same time, you can read John Paul II in his 1991 encyclical, Centesimus Annus, and in the same encyclical where he says, we got to admit the free market system is the one that really seems to perform the best, he goes on to say, literally in the same paragraph, but man is not completely reduced to economic terms, the material terms, and this same system can encourage, when it's operated without morals and without ethics, and without concern for the poor, it can encourage all the worst impulses. So it always comes back to not embracing sort of the world's way of looking, either at economics or politics or anything else. And I think over and over, that's what both men have called their flocks to do, is to question the ways of the world and question how much we're living the gospel in our day-to-day lives. And again, I think if we're completely comfortable in our culture, I think we're probably not paying enough attention to the gospel. And I think to the extent that Francis is challenging us to think about that in a new way, it's a great thing. But is he changing, you know, longstanding Catholic teaching on faith and morals, or fundamental principles about the, you know, right to human freedom, or you know, the need for markets with morals? No, that's not new. And that's not new. And that's not his role as Pope, and he'd be the first one to say so.
So isn't that really the heart of the concern, whether it be capitalism, communism, any form of socialism, a political system or ideology in the United States, something like libertarianism that would talk a lot about man as a kind of a cog in the market function, so to speak, reducing man to the mere economics of his life or the politics of his life? Isn't that the heart of the concern here?
That's right. And I think it's the heart of our temptation, too. You know, those of us who are serious, committed Christians tend to think that we're exempt from any of these temptations. But I know there's always that tug, I think, to say, ah, I have found my political party, or I have found my movement within a political party or outside it, or I've found my economic theory. I've found my little spot, and I can grab onto this, and everything makes perfect sense with this. And I don't have to pay attention to those parts of the gospel that make me uncomfortable, that challenge me to rethink even the smallest details of my life, from, you know, how much media I consume to how I spend my money, how much I tithe or don't, any of that. I think that's the temptation, and it's a strong, at least in my experience, for those of us who take Christianity seriously as for anyone else. I think we don't fall into the more obvious trap of saying that this life is all there is, and it's all about just getting more stuff. On the other hand, though, that tug toward having the best and having the most and being comfortable in a man-made ideology, I think that's always there. It's always there for all of us, and I think it's a temptation we have to battle our entire lives, and that's why I think remaining close to Christ in prayer and really returning over and over again to his hard words in Scripture is a good thing for all of us, no matter where we are in our journey.
Finally, I approach this from a historic Lutheran perspective, which is, I think there's not that much daylight between that and the Roman Catholic perspective when it comes to economics. But the pointed way that the historic Lutheran worldview would look at this is, look, God has given me neighbors, my family, those around me, those I work with, in all my various vocations that he's assigned me. But my neighbor is not a means to an end, economic, political, or otherwise. He is the target of my service in this world. By serving neighbor, God is God's work is done in the world to benefit the neighbor, and God is ultimately served. What would your thoughts be there?
Well, I certainly, you know, would agree with that idea, and I think it's a fundamental Christian principle, more broadly speaking, that man is never a means to an end. He's an end to himself, and he was created by God to glorify God and to find his eternal happiness in God. So anytime we start looking at, you know, our neighbors as potential, you know, sources of revenue, paychecks, you know, burdens, whatever, we know we're falling into the wrong way of looking at our lives. And at the same time, you know, this is a serious temptation. It's not something we go around saying. But if you spend any time at all, you know, watching TV or on the internet or just, you know, moving through the average shopping mall, you definitely get the feeling that people are to be evaluated by this way of looking at the world, and that people do sort of exist to make me happy or to give me what I want. And, you know, parenting in some ways is so much about this, because it's so rooted in our nature, in some ways, this, in our fallen nature, to look at others this way. And as much goodness as we also have that inclination that, you know, from a young age, we have to learn, no, you know, I look at the human person and the goodness that he has, that God gave him. And my job is to pour my life out in love for those around me, not to hoard everything up for myself. And of course, the surprise of life that, you know, is always, it's wonderful surprise, is the more that we pour ourselves out, the more we're filled up by God. And the more we give away, the more we get in the end. And that's, you know, the paradox of the Christian life. And that's the saving message of Christ in some ways, in terms of how it applies to our life in the world. And the trick is to actually live that day by day, hour by hour.
So finally, how would you summarize it, Colleen? You've gone through this transition now, going from the workplace to as we'd say, full-time mother. Now you got four little neighbors that you were caring for in a very intimate way and raising, trying to instill this way of looking at the world, their place in it, their neighbor, in them as well. How would you describe the balance, as you say, of beliefs and aspirations?
Well, you know, I think it's just that challenge of living every day what you believe, you know, what you talk about at a cocktail party or what you write in your articles, in my case, because I am still writing, and then actually living it in your home with your own family. You know, Mother Teresa used to say, I've got so many people who come over to Calcutta because they want to find Christ and they want to serve the poor, and I tell them, go home and serve the lonely person in your own home. You know, serve the person that's irritating you or difficult or in need of your help right there in your own home. So it's been, you know, it's a real education in love being a parent, and I think any parent knows that. And I love being with my kids, and they're great kids, and there's certainly plenty of challenges too, but I find so much of the greatest grace, you know, comes in these quiet, hidden moments that we have with those closest to us, the moments where no one's going to applaud us or slap us on the back or give us an award for some little victory over some passing sense of impatience or whatever. But those are actually the moments in some ways that count the most. And I always liked that phrase that John Paul II used in one of his documents where he said, you know, at the center of the great struggle between good and evil is the family. And I think that's really true today. So much of what's been attacking our culture began with an attack within the family, and it's how we treat our own family, including, you know, our extended family. And that's where the struggles are, but that's where the greatest, I think, victories and blessings can also come.
Colleen Carroll Campbell is a journalist in Washington, D.C., a former presidential speechwriter, author of the books My Sisters, the Saints, and The New Faithful. She's also written a column for The New York Times titled It's Possible to Balance Beliefs and Aspirations. You can read this column under the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org. Again, click Listen on Demand. Colleen, thanks for being our guest. Good to have you back.
Thanks, Todd. Great to be with you again.
When we come back on this Monday afternoon, June the 30th, Dr. Jennifer Roback Morris is going to join us. We're going to talk to her about two stories. First of all, St. Louis City decided late last week for a brief amount of time to issue same-sex marriage licenses. This over and against Missouri's same-sex marriage ban. What were they up to and what will this lead to? We'll also talk with Dr. Jennifer Roback Morris of the Ruth Institute about an appellate court ruling against Utah's gay marriage ban that may signal another step toward the Supreme Court for that issue. Then later, Pastor Tom Baker will join us, host of a radio show called Law and Gospel. We'll talk about Naaman the Syrian in 2 Kings chapter 5 and his healing, teaching a Sunday school lesson with Tom Baker a little later in Hour 2 of Issues, etc. Stay tuned.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Have you wondered what classical Lutheran education is all about? Are you a Lutheran homeschooler, pastor, or teacher? Would you like to be equipped to teach more effectively? Join the Consortium for Classical and Lutheran Education July 15th through the 17th at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. Find the conference schedule recently posted at ccle.org. Discover the education that is our Lutheran heritage, ccle.org.
Whether building a new home, remodeling an existing home, or tackling the weekend project, it is important to have the materials and advice needed to get the job done. RP Lumber offers estimates for professional building materials and services for drywall, decking, siding, shingles, cabinets, and kitchen and bath design to the general contractor and the individual homeowner. Delivery available with over 50 local community locations. For 37 years, RP Lumber.